Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage as we travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Not My Life, Slavery in Anchorage. This panel discussion, including Robin Bronin from the Alaska Institute for Justice, Michelle DeWitt from Tundra Women's Coalition, Jolene Godin from the FBI, and First Lady of Alaska Sandy Parnell, took place immediately following a screening of a documentary called Not My Life, about human trafficking and modern slavery worldwide. Hosted by the Alaska World Affairs Council, the panel on slavery in Alaska was recorded at Beartooth Theater Pub in Anchorage on October 7th. CEO of the Alaska World Affairs Council, Lisa Falsko, served as moderator.
We're going to have a discussion for about half an hour, 35 minutes, and then we're going to open up to questions from anyone here in the audience. We'll have a microphone over here on your right, and if you just want to line up, if you'd like to ask any of the panelists a question, we'll take questions for the remaining amount of time. And this program is being recorded for KSKA, so if you have any questions, if you could please come to the microphone and speak into that, it'd be greatly appreciated. So I'd like to quickly introduce the panelists we have here at our table and give you a little bit of a background into these individuals that we have here. To my right, or to my left, excuse me, is Jolene Godin. Jolene worked in Pennsylvania and Delaware in a state hospital setting with developmentally disabled and mentally ill sex offenders from 1996 to 1999. Jolene was responsible for developing and implementing behavior plans for problematic clients, evaluating clients, and writing sexual assessments for the court. She also conducted sex offender treatment groups for committed sex offenders in Delaware State Hospital. From 1999 to 2004, Jolene worked for the Minnesota Department for Corrections as a correction program therapist for adult males. Jolene worked in a sex offender treatment program and conducted individual and group therapy with sex offenders. Jolene received her appointment as a special agent with the FBI in March of 2004 and was assigned to the Anchorage Division. Jolene primarily works with human trafficking and crimes against children violations. She is assigned to the Child Exploitation Task Force, which is focused on investigating offenders who exploit children through commercial sex and child pornography. Jolene is partnered with the Anchorage Police Department, Vice Unit, and this task force. And to her left is First Lady Sandy Parnell. Sandy Parnell became the First Lady of Alaska in July 26, 2009, when her husband, Sean Parnell, was sworn in as Alaska's 10th governor. The First Lady is an advocate for educational opportunities for Alaskans. To prepare young Alaskans for achieving their educational goals, the First Lady focuses on literacy and the love of learning among elementary students. Partnering with the Scholastic Book Reading Ambassadors Program, the First Lady shares the joy of reading by personally distributing books to schools and reading to students. The First Lady is also a strong supporter for the Governor Parnell's Choose Respect initiative to end the epidemic of domestic violence and sexual assault in Alaska. She has participated in the annual marches and visited shelters to meet with victims and survivors. In 2008, the First Lady enrolled in several American Sign Language classes through the University of Alaska. Since then, she has been an advocate for the needs of the deaf community, calling for early detection and support for children who are deaf or hard of hearing, especially in Alaska's remote communities. And to her left is Michelle DeWitt. She's executive director of Tundra Women's Coalition, TWC, in Bethel, Alaska. She was born, lived in Bethel, and worked for TWC since 1997. TWC is a 30-bed shelter and outreach program serving Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region. TWC's programs include the emergency shelter, community outreach, a children's program, transitional housing, a children's advocacy center, and Teens Acting Against Violence, a preventative group for teens. In 2012, Michelle was appointed to serve on the State of Alaska's Task Force on the crimes of human trafficking, promoting prostitution and sex trafficking. Later this month, after 16 years of employment, Michelle will be retiring and moving on to work as executive director of Bethel Community Services Foundation. And to her left, Robin Bronin currently works as the executive director for the Alaska Institute for Justice, a nonprofit agency that is the only immigration legal service provider in Alaska, houses a language interpreter center, training bilingual Alaskans to be interpreters, and also is a research and policy institute focused on climate justice issues. No other agency in Alaska provides these services. The Alaska Institute for Justice provides immigration legal services to 850 Alaskans each year, with a priority to serve immigrant crime victims, including domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking victims. Robin has been working on human trafficking issues in Alaska since 2000 and was involved in the first federal prosecution to occur in the United States after Congress passed the Victims of Trafficking and Violence Protection Act legislation in 2000. We'll definitely want to get to that. And my first question, I just want to open up to the entire group that we have up here. And we'll have to pass the microphone. Unfortunately, we have two here today. Reflecting on the stories from the movie about human trafficking around the world, is this an issue in Alaska? Jolene.
I would say absolutely yes. We do have these types of issues in Alaska, both in rural Alaska and in the urban areas here in Anchorage.
This is something I was educated on by women sitting at this table, but we found that absolutely yes. Domestic trafficking and international trafficking occur here in Alaska.
And I would add, you know, I agree with this being an issue in our state. You know, it might look a bit different than what we saw in the movie, or in the documentary, but the dynamics repeat themselves in our state.
And I also would concur that human trafficking definitely happens in Alaska. And as Michelle said, one of the things about human trafficking is that traffickers are really sophisticated and smart. And so the way that people are trafficked is really often unique. There is not one way that a person is trafficked in our state or really in the world.
So, Jolene, whenever I hear people talk about champions in our state regarding the issue of human trafficking, your name often comes up, as it does so many times with the Israel Keyes Samantha Koenig case. Could you please describe your role at the FBI in regards to the issue of human trafficking and what the difference is between international and domestic sex trafficking?
My role at the FBI is I'm an agent, so I'm tasked with investigating human trafficking cases or child exploitation cases. And this is something I could talk about for a really long time, so I'll try to make it relatively quick. But I think to best define what we're seeing in terms of international trafficking and domestic trafficking, you first have to understand legally what the violation is. And just in a nutshell, federally, what we define as human trafficking is the obtaining, keeping, recruiting, whatever a person does to get another person for the purpose of forced labor or a commercial sex act. And that typically happens through force, physical beatings, violence, sexual assaults, and also types of coercion or fraud. So it's the lies that somebody tells somebody to recruit them into it, or the tricks and the lies that they use to keep people in that situation. And what we see in terms of with international victims or foreign-born victims, primarily around the state, Asian massage parlors. We have a significant number of Asian massage parlors across the state of Alaska in Anchorage. At any given time, there's 30 to 40 Asian massage parlors, and these are women that are trafficked, women that are put on a quote-unquote a circuit where they might spend 2 to 3 months here in Alaska, then they're shipped to California, then they're shipped to Chicago or New York or wherever it might be, very intentional on the part of the trafficker to keep them from making any ties in that community. So we see that with foreign-born or international victims, as well as trafficking in some of our ethnic restaurants, and also in the fishing industry. If you think about Alaska and some of our remote areas of Alaska where we have fish processing plants in the fishing industry, that is a ripe place for this to happen, because there's many times a very small, if any, law enforcement presence in those communities. And those victims and those individuals are moved on. I mean, it's seasonal work, so they're typically not in these communities for any extended period of time. And domestic trafficking are those victims that are born and raised here in Alaska or within the United States. And what we typically see with domestic trafficking victims is commercial sex. And that's the same definition I said a minute ago, keeping somebody, recruiting somebody for the purpose of a commercial sex act. And I think sometimes people get confused. They think it has to be that exchange of money. And what we see more and more with our young people is that it isn't money that's being exchanged. It isn't the passing actually of currency. It's a place to stay. It's clothing. It's those survival things that children need, that kids need, that are what is initially being exchanged, or what's being provided to that child, or drugs. That's something that we're seeing more and more of is our kids being traded for drugs, both by, you know, their boyfriend or, unfortunately, family members as well. So many, many examples that I could give, but that's just kind of a general overall summary.
Okay, thank you very much. And First Lady Sandy Parnell, the governor established a task force a year ago to address the crimes of human trafficking, promoting prostitution and sex trafficking. Since then, we've seen that you've been a great advocate for increasing awareness about human trafficking in Alaska, talking about this issue in front of AFN, and specifically advocating for youth across our state. Why are you so compelled to talk about this issue, and what do you think our state needs to do and we need to do to combat this issue?
2 years ago, this was not on my radar screen, not really. I had seen the movie Taken. We had our daughters watch it because we thought it was pretty important for them to be aware of. I was aware of some of the cases that had gone on in Anchorage vaguely, the Jerry Starr case in, I think, 2008. But I did not equate a pimp in a prostitution ring with human slavery or with trafficking. It just really wasn't connecting in my mind. I was much more focused on the epidemic that we have here in Alaska of domestic violence and sexual assault, and not really thinking about the fact that trafficking is very closely tied to those things. I actually took a trip overseas, and coming face to face with sex trafficking, that, you know, brought it to the fore in my mind. And once it had happened, you can't unring the bell. I just really felt compelled to action that. What we saw there was so devastating, and the question in our minds was, you know, my God, is this happening in Alaska? And so when we came back from that trip, we really spent a number of weeks, actually months, really talking with a lot of people in Alaska that have already been involved in this issue. Jolene being one of them, and Kathy Lacey from APD Vice Squad, Covenant House, McLaughlin Youth Center, and speaking with girls who have been trafficked there, corresponding with them. Many others really helped us to understand what the nature of sex trafficking in Alaska really looks like. That by then, I guess it was the spring of 2012, and so the governor, I have to say, is just as concerned as I am about this issue, and introduced legislation to really change the name of what was promoting prostitution and really calling by what it actually is, human trafficking, and making the penalties for traffickers much more severe, to an unclassified felony for traffickers that bring anybody into that trade under the age of 20, I believe. Also, the legislation covered other areas. At that time, too, from what I had really learned, I was especially concerned that Native girls, Alaska Native girls from the villages, were especially vulnerable. And so I called Gloria O'Neill from Cook Inlet Tribal Council, and I shared my concern with her, and that I really felt there needed to be, especially if they're coming into Anchorage unaccompanied and didn't have a safe place to stay, talking about maybe safe housing for these girls. And she is so gracious and agreed to convene a working committee. And so her and Lisa Marino put together many people from the community that are involved in this area, nonprofits, agencies. I think everybody here was a part of that working group. And came together a couple times and also in subcommittee groups and brought forth recommendations. During that time, also the legislature, and a bill sponsored by Senator Lisa McGuire, established a task force that would address the issues, looking at the scope of the problem and making recommendations as to what could be done, as well as the prevalence of the problem. So the working group from that was convened at Cook Inlet Tribal Council, their report, I think, really helped the task force in kind of an initial foundational support for them. Legislation was further passed in 2013 to bring more rights to the victims of trafficking, including, I think some, civil, they could sue civilly for damages, also forfeiture of any property that's used in relation to trafficking. And I think there's other things covered in that legislation too. If you're interested in that, you can, I think, go to the Department of Law website. The state of Alaska, in addition to just working through law and making laws and penalties stronger against this, calling it by what it is, and by working through carefully the recommendations made by the task force, and I think you'll be talking about that a little further because you actually sat on the task force, and keeping it in the forefront. We are not going to stop and let these things just fall. You know, the task force convened, it's over, and letting things just go under the carpet. These things are going to be continued to be looked at carefully and implemented because this is a travesty, along with domestic violence and sexual assault, that we need to turn the tide on.
Thank you very much. Michelle, I just want to say thank you for coming all the way from Bethel to be on this panel. We really, really appreciate it. You were actually on the governor's task force. Maybe you could explain to us, what was the purpose of this task force? What was your role, and what did you find out?
So the purpose of the State of Alaska task force, there were about four responsibilities, and those responsibilities were to find out about the scope of the problem. So looking at what was happening in the law enforcement community and the prosecution, the criminal justice response our state was implementing. And then it was also to do a survey on resources and find out what's available in our state for victims of human trafficking. And then the final responsibility was to come up with a series of recommendations to propose to the legislature for them to take under consideration to improve the state's response to and prevention of trafficking.
Thank you. And so you live and work in Bethel and are now in touch with what this issue looks like in some of our native communities. Could you please talk a little bit more about what this is in our rural communities and compare this to some of the stories in the movie?
Well, the common themes, you know, watching the documentary have to do with vulnerabilities and poverty. So when you look at what makes somebody susceptible to human trafficking, some common themes emerge. So for example, homelessness, sometimes addictions, childhood traumas, their exposure to domestic violence. These are the kinds of issues that make people very vulnerable to trafficking. All kinds of issues around poverty, opportunity, those kinds of things. So in our community and in our region, trafficking might look like two different scenarios. One, in more locally or regionally, you hear a lot about survival sex, which Jolene mentioned, you know, trading sex for alcohol, drugs, and most commonly a place to stay. So that's a common theme. And people who participate in survival sex often don't see themselves, they don't see that as them being a trafficking victim frequently. They see themselves as a voluntary participant. And so it takes a lot of times education with people who are experiencing trafficking for them to identify themselves as victims. And I'll try to talk about that a little more in a minute. The other dynamic that sometimes happens is when folks in rural Alaska are recruited into more urban road system areas. And so that might look like coming into Anchorage for, say, a medical appointment or a big event, like AFN is always a time when we are concerned about folks. So coming in for something specific and then being approached by someone or recruited into a trafficking scenario. Sometimes folks are recruited in by friends or family, you know, and they might go to stay with somebody who has a place to stay, but maybe they're precariously housed, or maybe they have really crowded housing, or maybe they go to stay there and they say, well, if you're going to continue to stay here rent-free, you're going to need to do these certain things, or they hook them up with somebody who leads them down that path. So there's a couple of different ways that we see that scenario playing out. And finally, I'd say that before, you know, I dealt a lot with working with folks who were engaged in survival sex kinds of situations, both teens and adults. But before I really was actively participating in this task force, I also sat on the group that Cook Inlet Tribal Council worked on with First Lady Parnell. I started to ask questions of folks in our shelter, and I was shocked by the number of responses that I got from our program participants, saying that they knew folks who were involved in prostitution and had been trafficked, mostly here in Anchorage. So we kind of were catching the survival sex things that were happening in my organization, but what we didn't realize were the number of people who knew somebody or who they themselves had found themselves in a trafficking situation here in town. And so what I came to realize, and if there's time I can talk a little bit more about recommendations, is the amount of education that a lot of our service providing organizations need for their staff on asking the right questions when folks are accessing health care, or because they often, you know, might present as a victim of sexual assault, or maybe they present as a victim of domestic violence. In an organization like mine, we're addressing this one issue, but we're not getting to some of the root dynamics sometimes of what folks are experiencing. So I think we have a level of education in our organizations and in our state about this issue.
Thank you very, very much. Robin, I want to also thank you for your tireless work on this issue. When we first talked about doing this program, Robin was the first person we called, and she just returned from Juneau to talk for hundreds of people down there about this issue. So thank you very much for championing this. I understand from your bio that the Trafficking Victims Protection Act was established in 2000, and you said the first case in the U.S. to be tried by this new federal law was actually here in Anchorage. Could you tell us what happened in this case that made you believe human trafficking was present in our state?
Sure. Well, and I want to thank all of you for still being here and being concerned and interested, because this really requires a community response. And honestly, until First Lady Parnell started being in this issue, it was Jolene and I and a handful of others who have been tirelessly trying to figure out how to bring more resources in our state. And as Lisa said, so the first human trafficking case prosecuted in the United States happened right here in Anchorage, Alaska. And before I talk about it, I want to talk about the federal law, the Violence Against Women Act, because it's really through the Violence Against Women Act that Congress has been addressing generally violence primarily against women and children. And as Lisa mentioned in the beginning, I have been working here in Anchorage, actually in Alaska, on domestic violence and sexual assault issues in the immigrant community since 1996. And immigration status is probably the most powerful tool that an abuser can use to keep that person from seeking safety and protection because of a huge fear of deportation. That means she will not go get health care, she will not go to the shelter, she absolutely will not go to the court or contact law enforcement. And Congress recognized that in 1994. They enacted the Violence Against Women Act for the first time, and in that act, so prior to 1994, if you were an immigrant spouse married to a U.S. citizen, your U.S. citizen spouse had complete control over your immigration application. You could be married, you could have U.S. citizen children, but unless your U.S. Citizen spouse actually completed the application, immigration application for you, you could be deported at the drop of a hat, and that was happening. And so Congress changed the law in 1994 to make it possible for immigrant spouses married to U.S. citizens who are victims of domestic violence to actually file that paperwork on their own. That was a huge step forward. The Violence Against Women Act gets reenacted every 5 to 6 years. And in 2000, they recognized that they had addressed some of the issues affecting the immigrant community, but not all of them. And human trafficking was included in the 2000 legislation. And the reason at the time that it was only focused on foreign-born nationals being trafficked into the United States is because if you are an immigrant and you have no legal immigration documents, you are barred from receiving any sort of public assistance benefits. You can't get housing, you can't get Medicaid, you can't get TANF, public assistance benefits if you have children. And so Congress recognized that. They increased the criminal penalties for human trafficking, and then created a case management or social service system so that if immigrants were identified as human trafficking victims, they could actually get social services. And I learned about this law in October of 2000, right after it passed, and never thought that 2 months later I would be getting a phone call from the government attorney who worked for the Immigration and Naturalization Service at the time. There were seven young Russian women who came to the United States, and so it's not only about poverty. That's when I mentioned earlier that traffickers are really sophisticated and smart. I think that this case just is an example of that. So the person who trafficked these seven young women, and two of them were under the age of 18, was a revered member of their very small community. And he was a dance instructor, and he had been teaching these young women for over a decade dancing. And he suggested to their parents that he would arrange a trip to Alaska to do folkloric cultural dancing throughout our state. The parents of the two children who were 16 years old gave him power of attorney. He went to the U.S. Embassy. So the thing that is also, in my experience, common about this is folks are entering with legal immigration documents, but they're fraudulent, meaning that the person getting the legal immigration documents is lying to the U.S. Embassy. And that happened in this case. He went to the U.S. Embassy in Moscow and got the seven young women tourist visas to come here to do folkloric dancing. They arrived a couple of days later. They were met at the Anchorage airport by the local trafficker who was living in Eagle River and taken to his home. And then the next day they were forced to dance at the Crazy Horse, the strip club that I believe no longer is open in our community. And they were advertising that they had Russian dancers, and so the Immigration and Naturalization Service, hearing that there were Russian dancers and thinking that these dancers were probably working in violation of their tourist visa, did a raid on the strip club and arrested four of the women. The two 16-year-olds and the older sister were not there. So the Immigration and Naturalization Service arrested these four young women. We do not have an immigration detention facility here, so they were arrested and put on an airplane to Seattle, to the immigration detention facility there. While they were on the plane, I got a phone call, as I mentioned, from the lead government attorney for the Immigration and Naturalization Service, because she was upset by the fact that they had conducted this raid and arrested the women, and we started talking about the fact that these young women had only been in the United States for 2 weeks, did not speak any English, and I was thinking, there's no way that they would go dance at the Crazy Horse on their own without somebody orchestrating or forcing them to do that. She concurred. We got a colleague of mine who lives in Seattle to go to the immigration detention facility as soon as they arrived, which was great because the traffickers had also arranged for a lawyer to meet them. Unfortunately, my colleague got there first. And then, again, through another incredible set of circumstances, like 48 hours later, the district director of the Immigration and Naturalization Service arrested one of the traffickers at the Anchorage International Airport as he was about to leave the country with the two 16-year-olds and the older sister. And so that was the first federal prosecution under the Victims of Human Trafficking Protection Act. And there were convictions, and I'm happy to say that I believe 5 of the 7 women are still in our community and doing great. They have gone to college, they own businesses, and they are really well integrated and are contributing members of our community.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition from NPR News, reminding you that when you listen to public radio, you're part of a community. There are so many media that grab tiny fragments of the audience. Public radio brings Americans together. When you're listening to public radio, you're listening along with people in every city, people of every age, of every political persuasion. You're listening with your fellow Alaskans to Talk of the Nation on KSKA. You're listening to Morning Edition, listening to All Things Considered. And think about it. How often have you talked with a friend or a neighbor and somebody brings up something that they heard on KSKA? You belong to the public radio community. Please support the station that brings us all together. KSKA. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. KSKA FM 91.1.
Call 550-8484 to become a member of Alaska Public Media or go online to alaskapublic.org. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Addressing Alaskans with Robin Bronin from the Alaska Institute for Justice, Michelle DeWitt of Tundra Women's Coalition, Jolene Godin from the FBI, and First Lady of Alaska Sandy Parnell. Following a screening of Not My Life, a documentary about human trafficking and modern slavery worldwide, they all participated in a panel discussion on slavery in Alaska at Beartooth Theater Pub. The event was moderated by Lisa Falsko, CEO of the Alaska World Affairs Council, and recorded on October 7th.
I have a whole list of questions, but unfortunately, due to our time, we only have another 13 minutes, so I want to open the questions up to you. If anyone would like to ask a question of any or all of our panelists, if they could just come to the right-hand side over here. Kari has a microphone, and we will take questions from anyone who would like to ask anything.
I'm curious, how were they able to stay? I think I went to high school with some of the girls that happened to, so I remember when this was happening. But legally, how were they able to stay in the U.S.?
That's a great question. So as part of the Violence Against Women Act in 2000, Congress created 2 new visas, a T visa for human trafficking victims and a U visa for other crime victims. And so they all got T visas, lawful permanent residents, and now they're U.S. citizens.
Hi. At the end of the movie, it asks, what will we do? So I ask you, what should we do? As peoples of this community, what should we do to help this situation?
I think being here is a great first step because you all really are the eyes and ears. Speaking for law enforcement, there aren't a lot of us in law enforcement. And so being the eyes and ears, becoming educated on the topic, having an idea of what to look for. And it's difficult. We're often asked, what do you look for? And there really isn't a cookie cutter response to that. But I am a huge believer in listening to your gut. And when you have that gut feeling that something is not right in a situation, it probably is not. So asking additional questions, reaching out to social service providers, reaching out to law enforcement if there are situations that just are not right to you. I'll come up with more. I know there's a lot more.
I think that's a great question. And I, too, want to say thank you for being here and being involved, because you being here tonight shows that you care about this. And really to turn the tide against this evil, the stripping of human dignity and respect and the exploitation of people, I know it's appalling to all of us. And we all have to be part of that solution. Government isn't going to be the whole answer. Law enforcement's not going to be the whole answer. It really is every Alaskan being involved in turning the tide against this and really standing up for human dignity and respect. There are many ways to do that. You can be involved in prevention areas, in strengthening families, in working in your community to strengthen your community. One of the big vulnerabilities for trafficking is kids who have been previously sexually abused. And so breaking that cycle of violence really before it hits the next generation is very important. There are many, many positive programs that are already going on in Alaska. I'm so proud of Alaskans for already stepping up to the plate in fighting against domestic violence, sexual assault, and really trafficking issues as well. And so you can be a mentor. You could be a big brother, a big sister. Consider being a foster parent. Good foster parents are needed. Be a mentor at Covenant House. There's a lot of positive programs going on in the schools, coaching boys into men. Girls on the Run, Green Dot are some of those. If you have a desire and interest, but you don't know where to start, you can talk to any of the people here. Also, Katie Tipas from the governor's office. She is a special assistant and director of the Choose Respect Initiative, can help give you information as well. You can also go to the Alaska website, alaska.gov website, click on governor's button, click on Choose Respect, and that will give you all kinds of resources and other links to go to. But it really is about all of us being involved in turning the tide.
Thought of one more thing. I knew I would. There are a number of organizations and folks that are all about doing reaching out and doing education within the community. Law enforcement, Covenant House, Robin's organization, a number of organizations that will be more than happy to help provide education. So if you are part of an organization, everything from church groups to your workplaces, if you belong to an organization that is willing to learn more and hear more about this and talk more specifically about what to look for, by all means reach out to us. And we joke about this, but we say we will talk to anyone who will listen. So by all means reach out and we can make that happen.
And then something I would add is, because I'm always looking for concrete things sometimes when people ask, like, how do I help or what can I do? And one thing that comes to mind is when folks have come forward and say that they're a victim of trafficking, to break that cycle, they tend to have total and all-encompassing needs. So for many people who have experienced trafficking, their identification documents have been taken. They have very few belongings. A lot of folks have difficulty because traffickers will typically provide a place to stay and access to food and transportation. You can imagine coming out of that and trying to start all over when you may not even have an ID. It's very expensive and very difficult to do. And we have very few resources in Alaska thus far to help people rebuild all of those things. So it can be a challenge for the responding organizations to find, to be able to get all the resources they need to help people in that all-encompassing way. So if you're really interested in, you know, what can I do, what physical, tangible things can I do, you can very easily approach one of these organizations or an agency serving victims and come up with some concrete things you can provide to help people get on their feet. That's a big issue facing folks.
Hi. I just would like to bring to your attention, I just arrived to Anchorage a couple months ago, and I was looking for to rent an apartment, and I went to Craigslist. And there was a very weird spot that then I realized was something wrong with that. But now I understand that completely was something wrong with that. And after a couple days, I was thinking about, I was looking for the same post, and I couldn't find it. But it was a guy offering placement for the lady. She could be able to stay there, to eat as much as she wants, but she has to do whatever he asks to her. So just would like to bring your attention to that stuff.
One thing to add on to that is there are a number of websites that have very legitimate purposes. Craigslist is one of them, but that also are used to exploit, commercially exploit women and children and men. And certainly if you're on any of those sites and you see things that look suspicious to you, by all means, call law enforcement, call and let us know, because what happens is those posts will go down very quickly. Also, social networking. We're seeing more and more hints of trafficking coming about on social networking sites, Facebook and things like that. So when I say that you all are our eyes and ears, you truly, truly are in many ways.
So, and we just got a large federal grant. Carrie Robinson, who's in the audience and works with me, we've been trying to get federal money to support human trafficking services and investigation now for years. And finally, we just were awarded a federal grant. We don't receive any state money, so this will begin to allow us to finally get services to folks who are in need and to re-implement. Jolene and I were on an anti-human trafficking task force that I believe was started in 2005, and we lost funding in about 2008. So we will start that anti-human trafficking task force again. And really try to figure out how to use these funds that we've received well.
I think we actually have time for one more question. If you have any more questions, we'll just have to move out, and maybe you can contact one of the panelists or myself, and we can get you in touch with one of these many organizations that can help with this topic. So one more question.
Thank you, Lisa. And thanks to this panel for sitting out here and educating us in regard to child and woman trafficking. I'm a UAS student. We have done a research on this issue, and what we have found out was that trafficking actually, especially here in Alaska, that are coming out of foreign countries, done through containers coming into the state. My first question is, at least that's a hint to how to penetrate that part of the issue. The domestic issue, which is also very important, and like stated by all of you, the governor has a task force, and you have a task force as well, and your task forces are working towards taking care of the situation. But this situation seems to be a worldwide situation, and it's like it's affecting a whole bunch, especially women and children. Do you think we are moving too slow? Do you think we should move faster towards this issue? And what would you guys do about that?
I mean, I think I would love to move faster. I mean, this is something, like Robin mentioned, we've been working on this since 2004, before me. And I see films like we saw today, and I mentioned to Robin when we were down here, we're not doing enough. It always feels that way. And, you know, unfortunately, there are other things that come into play, resources and money and things like that. But, you know, through the hard work of folks like Robin who apply for grants to help get money and people becoming invested in this, I think the tide is turning. And I can tell you that 2 or 3 years ago, we would not have had this type of response here in this room. So the tide is definitely turning, and I think we're gaining momentum, and I hope that things continue to go in that direction.
I think that we are making headway, and we have been meeting some of the factors that the Polaris Project deems that states need to be meeting to really be addressing the issue of trafficking. We have been reaching some of those pretty well. There's a lot more that needs to be done. But one of the nice things about our state is that we're a big, small state, that we all know each other, that we can work very well together. Across agencies, across nonprofits, we actually sat down through training together and really shared a lot between us. So I think that's an advantage of being here in Alaska and still being kind of in the beginning stages of really tackling this problem, is that progress can really be made effectively and working well together because we can collaborate well together. And we will continue to make progress. Everyone here has a passion for it, and many Alaskans do as well.
I want to thank everybody for coming, and if you like this format with a movie and a panel discussion, please join us for the Alaska World Affairs Council's next program like this, which will be on December 5th at Alaska Public Media, where we will feature a movie called Girl Rising, which will feature nine girls from 9 different countries and the issues they are facing and how they're rising above it, followed by a panel discussion. Thank you for coming.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with Robin Ronan from the Alaska Institute for Justice, Michelle DeWitt of Tundra Women's Coalition, Jolene Godin from the FBI, and First Lady of Alaska, Sandy Parnell. They responded to questions from audience members following their panel discussion on slavery in Anchorage at the Beartooth Theater Pub. The discussion was recorded immediately following a screening of a documentary called Not My Life, about human trafficking and modern slavery worldwide. The film and panel event was hosted by the Alaska World Affairs Council and recorded at Beartooth Theater Pub on October 7, 2013. Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online anytime at alaskapublic.org. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Platt. Thanks for listening.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.